Usually on Father's Day, Mother's Day, we get a nice lesson a lot of times about how wonderful mothers are and how we all owe so much to our mothers, which is certainly true. And then on Father's Day, we beat the fathers half to death and tell them what horrible fathers they were and how they ought to be doing better. So I thought we'd just skip that today. And I do try to sometimes have some encouraging words for fathers on Father's Day. Today I thought we'd just talk about Jesus' relationship with fathers, Jesus and the nobodies. That's kind of, in our society today, it does seem like more and more the role of fathers is kind of becoming insignificant to people. They don't think it's that important. The father is kind of becoming the nobody of our society, and certainly that's sad. That's not the way it ought to be. But we do want to understand that Jesus loves fathers, and we need to love fathers too. There's a reason that God designed the home to have a father and a mother. They both play an important role, and we know that there are times when that does not or cannot happen for some reason or another. But certainly that's the goal, and that's the ideal that God established. And it's best when that can be that way. But we do want to talk about Jesus and his relationship with the people who were just your average run-of-the-mill citizen that nobody knew and nobody cared about. And the nobodies of the world. You know, most of us are fascinated by the lives of famous people, wealthy people. We wonder, you know, what's it like to be famous? What's it like to be so rich that you can buy anything you want? What's it like? You know, we wonder about those things. There was, for a time, a show, and I know some of the older ones in our gathering this morning will recognize the lifestyles of the rich and famous. And old Robin Leach would come on, and he would talk about this particular, and he'd let us tour their houses and look at all their fancy things and all their 17 automobiles and all of those things. And he would point out what fabulous lives they had. He used to talk about, you know, caviar dreams. I don't know why anybody'd want to eat fish eggs that badly, but you know, some people like that kind of thing. But you know, nobody would tune in to a show that was called Lifestyles of the Poor and Obscure. You know, if we watch those shows that has the poor folks and the, you know, those folks, we want it to be Jerry Springer type show. You know, oh, they're fighting with each other. Boy, wow, look at it, they're doing something crazy. But nobody just wants to see a run-of-the-mill, day-to-day life of an average person. That's just boring. And I think our kids kind of get that. They watch TV shows where more happens in one 30-minute episode than happens in most people's life. And they're, oh, wow, what? Our life's so boring. I tell my kids all the time, hey, when you get to be an adult, boring is good. We like boring. The exciting times are a little stressful. We'd rather if it was boring all the time. But the fact of the matter is, there are a lot of nobodies in the world. There are very few of the rich and famous, very few of the popular and the well-known. Most of us are nobodies. So how did Jesus treat the nobodies? You know, a lot of times we actually even will look down on other people who are, you know, they're kind of just like us, really, but well, we already know people like us. We want to know special people. And we're not special people, and so you're not special people, and so, we're not interested in you. And in fact, sometimes we kind of despise people who are the nobodies, people who are especially, they're even lower than me. They're less significant than I am. They're less special than I am. And they're just really nobody. And we have a tendency to look down on people like that. We despise them. We don't even want to talk to them sometimes. You have it in every society. I mean, it was not something that was unique to Jesus' day. It's not something that's unique to our day or our culture. It's in every society around the world. There are groups of people who are just unimportant to to the rest of the people in that society. It may be the untouchables in India. It may be the Romas in Eastern Europe. In America, for a time, and I guess to some, immigrants are looked down on and despised, and well, go back home. And it's been every immigrant group from the beginning that's come over in a group that, it was the Irish, and then after slavery, people looked down on black people, and people looked down on the Hispanic people and everybody finds somebody to look down on and despise that group of people, and they're not important, and they're nobodies. But we sometimes even think, those people that are nobodies, those people that are lower than me, those people that are less important than me, they're just in the state that they're in because they're lazy, they're no good, they're just shiftless and dishonest, and they deserve to be where they are. And that may even seem like a comforting thought to say, because if they would work at it, they could get out of there and they wouldn't have to be like they are, and things wouldn't have to be like that. And those thoughts may be comforting, but you know what? They're not Christ-like thoughts. For us to look down on other people, that's not the story of Jesus. Jesus, in fact, his story is a story of, first of all, he himself was a nobody. He wasn't famous or popular. He was born and laid in a manger. He grew up a common household. He wasn't wealthy. We talked before about the fact that his parents, when it came time to give the sacrifice, they offered the turtle doves because they were not wealthy enough to offer the better sacrifice. He was a nobody himself. But his story is also about how he related to other nobodies to make them somebody. So as we consider Jesus and his relationship with those in the world that were nobodies, we want to talk about his love for them. Because it's important for us because, outside of our own circle, and if we flew any of us out to Wyoming, nobody there would know who we are. We're nobody to them. If we flew us all out to New Mexico, they wouldn't know who we are. Certainly if we flew ourselves over to France or to Japan or somewhere, they wouldn't know who we are. We're nobody. We're nobodies to them. Jesus loved the nobodies. Now, he did have contact with the rich and famous. He didn't just shun them entirely and say, I don't want to ever talk to one of those rich people. He had interaction with them as well. We read about him meeting, those beautiful people. He met the rich young ruler. Rich, young, ruler. Wow, he's got it all, right? Jesus met him. He met Nicodemus, who was a high-ranking leader of the Jews, Pharisee on the Sanhedrin Council. And Joseph of Arimathea, you want to know how rich Joseph was? And you've probably read it or heard it and never really thought about it. Joseph of Arimathea was so wealthy that he had a tomb, and the tombs in those days, a lot of times it was a cave in a rock. But he had a tomb, he had a cave in a rock for burial that had never been used. So what's that got to do with wealth? Do you know how hard it is to find a cave in a rock in that day and age when that's where everybody buried their dead that hadn't ever been used before? Now either he had this thing carved out, which would have, imagine the work it would have taken to carve a burial room out of a rock. The guy was rich. He has to do with religious leaders off and on. He goes before the governor Pilate and the king Herod. I mean, I don't know. You know, we might maybe have at some point some interaction with our state governor. Maybe. Maybe we get to see a president, you know. Maybe you're just more special than me. Maybe you hang out with presidents and governors all the time. Maybe so. I don't. I don't know a lot of people who do. But Jesus did interact with all those folks. But you know, he didn't say a lot of good things about those interactions. He warned about how hard it would be for the rich to enter heaven. A lot of times, the bad guys in his parable were those folks. Remember the story of the rich man and Lazarus. The rich man's not a good guy. You remember the Good Samaritan, the priest and Levite, they were the goody-goodies, and they walked by on the other side. It was this lowly Samaritan that helped the guy. Not always the good guys who are the wealthy ones in his stories. His greatest conflicts weren't with the nobodies, weren't with the crowds that followed him. His greatest conflict were with those people who were the elites. In reading the Gospels, you can't evade a conviction that Jesus deliberately provoked and irritated and exasperated the very class of people that we sometimes try so hard to impress. They weren't what he was all about. They weren't what he was here for. The rich and famous really didn't care much for Jesus. They were opposed to him almost from the start. He wasn't one of them. And he threatened their power and their security and their way of life and their authority. And he didn't respect them the way... He didn't kowtow to their every wish. He didn't bow before them and kiss their ring and all that. And so they didn't like him, and in fact, they're the ones who plotted together to kill him. And then they persuaded many of in the crowd to go along with it. So he did have some contact with them, but most of Christ's work, most of it was with the nobodies. Most of it was people who we wouldn't know about if it weren't for the Gospels writing about them. You know, yeah, we would know who Pilate was from Roman history. We could know who Herod was from Roman and Jewish history. But you know, we wouldn't know about Matthew or John or Peter. We wouldn't even know their names if Jesus hadn't chosen them. And they weren't fancy people. They weren't special people. They weren't the famous people. They were just everyday nobodies. The fishermen, the tax collectors, the poor, the handicapped even, the prostitutes, the failures, the children, the women, the Gentiles, all the people who in his culture, in his day, would have been pushed aside out of the way as unimportant, unworthy, or even a problem. Those were the people that we read about throughout the gospel accounts of his life. That's them. A listing of Christ's followers would probably read more like a rogue gallery than it would a social register or a who's who in society. He was surrounded by people who knew they were nobodies, but realized that he was somebody and he cared about them. Jesus went out of his way to find these people on many occasions. He had the amazing ability to transform these nobodies into somebodies, to make them people who would be spoken about for years and centuries and millennia to come. So that we know the names of people who otherwise would never have been mentioned. In fact, it wouldn't be far off the mark to say that Jesus came to give significance to insignificant people. No, no, you mentioned, wait a minute, he said he came to seek and save the lost. Well, that's not far off, is it? They were the insignificant people. They were lost. And they needed someone to find them. Let's look quickly in our remaining time at four examples of some nobodies that Jesus interacted with. And we're not going to have time to dig deeply into these. We're just going to briefly read about them and mention them. But we want to understand a little bit about these folks. First is the physical nobody. Blind Bartimaeus. In Mark chapter 10 and verses 46 through 52, they were coming out of Jericho, and this blind Bartimaeus, he was the son of Timaeus. That's what Bartimaeus means, son of Timaeus. He sat by the highway. He was begging because he was blind. What else could he do? He didn't have any welfare. He didn't have any disability. There was nothing like that in their society. So if you were handicapped in any way, and you couldn't physically work a job or didn't have the mind to do something mentally that would get you income, you were stuck begging. Depending on other people throwing you a little bit of their spare change to survive. And of course, in that day and age, their medicine was pretty primitive. They didn't have a lot of the possibilities we have for fixing any of those kinds of things at all. And so a lot of them were just stuck in that situation. In fact, we read about a woman in Mark 5:26. She had suffered a great deal from many doctors and had spent all that she had, and she was no better. And, you know, that can still happen today. But then that was the common practice. Nobody got better from going to the doctor very often. The doctors didn't know what to do. A lot of it was voodoo and witchcraft and just superstition. It wasn't actually medical help in many of those cases. And many saw sickness as a sign that these people deserved what they got because they'd been bad and they'd sinned against God and God was punishing them. And you see that in John chapter 9. But here he is, this blind Bartimaeus. He's sitting there begging. He hears Jesus of Nazareth is coming, and he begins to cry out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And everybody told him to shut up. Be quiet. Don't bother him. But when they said that, what did he do? He just cried out more. "Son of David, have mercy on me." And then Jesus stopped and said, "Bring him over here." And they said, "All right, you know, cheer up. He wants to talk to you." So he threw his cloak aside and he came to Jesus. And Jesus said, "What do you want me to do?" And he said, "Oh Lord, that I might see." And Jesus said, "Your faith has made you whole. Go your way." And immediately he received his sight and he followed Jesus. And when we think about it, you know, the crowd had a very different attitude. Be quiet, don't bother him. But Jesus said, "Let me talk to him. He's crying out for me. Let me see what he needs. Let me see what he wants." So he was physically a nobody. But he became a somebody because of Jesus. We wouldn't have known his name if it weren't for this account. Would have never even known he existed. Then there's this demon-possessed man. He's an emotional nobody. Boy, I mean, if people ignored the blind or those with some sort of handicap, then how they treated those that had some sort of mental issue like a demon possession or any other kind of mental instability was even more extreme. Think about what they did to this poor guy. here he is Mark chapter 5 and verses 1 through 9. We'll start there. He's got a demon, and it apparently gives him some great strength. They come over to across the sea. They land in the country of the Gadarenes. And when he was come out of the ship, immediately this man with an unclean spirit comes out of the tombs. You want to think about something pretty creepy. It's a demon-possessed guy living in a graveyard. I mean, graveyard, you know, kind of spooky already. You got a demon-possessed guy living in there. Nobody wants to go near there. Right? I mean, that's... And the stories they would tell, I'm sure. Ooh. Well, he'd been living among the tombs. And everyone had tried to bind him, even with chains, but he was so strong because of these demons that were in him. They couldn't control him. They couldn't hold him. He would break the ropes. He would break the chains. He just busted them, verse 4 tells us. Nay and night, he was in the mountains and in the tombs crying and cutting himself with stones. When he saw Jesus, he ran and worshipped him. Cried out with a loud voice, "What do I have to do with you, Jesus, you Son of the Most High? Please, don't torment me." Because Jesus had said, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And he asked him, "What's your name?" And he answered, saying, "My name is Legion, for we are many." It wasn't him answering, it was the demons answering for him. This is a guy everybody wanted to pretend that he didn't even exist. I mean, they tried to chain him up so that they wouldn't even have to be around him at all. And of course, he was probably a pretty dangerous fellow anyway. I mean, you got all those demons, that's a pretty dangerous situation. Sorry, my sinuses are a little active today with the allergy with pollen. Thought I was past that time of the year. But here he is. And then Jesus casts those demons into that herd of pigs that's over on the mountainside. They all go crazy and run down off the steep slope, land in the water, drown. Story of the time Jesus made deviled ham. You know. But here we have then him clothed. It's significant, verse 15 mentions that. He's clothed and in his right mind. Before, when he was crazy, when he was possessed by the demons, he was running around naked. Now, here's the part that becomes really... Jesus tells him, down toward the end of that passage, in verse 19, "Go home to your friends," and some translations say family. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine having been this guy's friends or family, having a home to go to, going back there after what you'd been and what you'd done? Wonder how Father's Day was around his house. Did he have children? They probably weren't too proud of their father. There are some today that have some family members that are struggling with all kinds of things that bring out the worst in them, like this fellow. And then there's the social nobody. The Syrophoenician woman. She was a Canaanite woman. She wasn't even a Jewish person at all, which means she really didn't count in Jewish society. In Matthew 15 and verses 21 through 28, we read about her, and she was so far into the nobody field that even the other nobodies didn't pay attention to her. That's how far off the path she was. And we even see the language that Jesus uses with her that would have been the common language that others would have used. And we see how far out it is. Jesus refers to her somewhat indirectly as a dog. He says, "It's not good to give the children's bread to the dogs." When she comes asking, her daughter has a demon and she wants Jesus to cast the demon out of her daughter. And Jesus says, "Well, you know, I'm sent to the Jews and hey, we shouldn't give the children's bread to the dogs." Voicing the sentiments probably of a lot of the people in the crowd around him. Hey, who's this woman think she is coming up here? This Gentile woman. This was an expression of what was a common teaching with some rabbis. And we mentioned this during our class earlier for the adults in the auditorium class. Some of the rabbis actually taught that the only reason God created the Gentiles was so He would have fuel to fuel the fires of hell. That was their whole purpose in existence. Just so God would have something to burn. And this is the woman that comes to Him. She must have heard something. Even as Jesus is saying, "No, I'm sent to the Jews. No, we're not going to give the children's bread to the dogs." There must have been something. Maybe she heard some sarcasm in His voice. Something that encouraged her to keep trying and go a little further. And so she continues and she says, "Well, yes, Lord, but even the dogs get to eat the crumbs." She's in essence saying, "Lord, I'll be glad to be a dog in Your household. If You'll be my master and if You'll just give me some crumbs, I don't care. I'll be the dog." You know, Proverbs, Solomon says it's better to be a live dog than a dead lion. You know, I mean, if I can just be there. David said it better be a gatekeeper, a doorman in the house of the Lord than to have all this other fame and fortune out in the world. This woman had that attitude. She just wanted to be with Jesus no matter what. And He brags about her faith. "O woman, great is your faith." And then He says, "It'll be like you want it to be. Your daughter will be healed." Great faith. And then the fourth, the thief on the cross, that moral nobody. He was a sinner of sorts. Already, you know, he's dying. Of course he deserves it. He's a thief. He's been arrested. He's been convicted. He's on the cross dying, getting what he deserves. But Jesus, and you know, the thing that truly amazing here is, I mean, Jesus Himself is on this cross in agony, dying. You ever notice that when you're sick or in pain, you kind of focus on yourself and you don't have a whole lot of time for other people? That's kind of a natural way. I mean, you know, when we're sick, we're not wanting to worry about taking care of somebody else. We want somebody to take care of us. Jesus is dying on the cross. And at that point, He has the time for somebody else? That's phenomenal. It's almost unbelievable that He would be concerned about somebody else's well-being when He's in that situation. You know, being a criminal, I mean, a thief, think about that. I mean, what do we do with thieves? find them. Maybe probation, maybe some jail time, maybe a little, try to rehabilitate them afterwards. We don't generally execute them. I mean, that's a little extreme. I mean, the guy stole something and you're going to execute him for it. Even in Islamic countries today, I mean, you steal something, they chop your hand off. That's pretty wild, but executing them? But that's where they were. It's who this guy was. He wasn't going to get any mercy. And it's interesting, though, he acknowledges, as he says to the other thief who's saying bad things about Jesus, he says, you know what? We're here, we deserve to be here because of what we've done. But this man, he's done nothing to deserve this. Says something about his character too, that he would think of that in the midst of this situation. In Luke 23, one of them's just yelling at Jesus, saying, hey, get us down from here. You're really who you say you are. You got all this power. Get us out of this. The other one says, come on. We deserve what we're getting. He hadn't done anything. And then he says, Lord, remember me when you come in your kingdom. A better grasp of Jesus' kingdom than his own disciples had. When they saw Jesus on the cross, they said, that's it. I guess it's all over. This guy's hanging on the cross dying with him, and he says, hey, when you come in your kingdom, you remember me. He still knows there's a kingdom coming. The disciples had given up. But Jesus, in the middle of one of the most important moments in history, when, wouldn't he want the spotlight on me? Here I am, I'm dying for everyone's sins. Everybody pay attention. No, he turns to deal with this lost soul who needs him. Jesus' ministry brought meaning and value to people. It made the nobody somebody. Do we do that? If we're going to be like our Lord and Savior, if we're going to be like Christ, then this is one of the things that we need to do. One of the things that we need to change about our lives if we don't pay attention to the little people in the world, to the nobodies around us. The early disciples are reminded. You see that not many rich, not many wise, not many of those special people are called. Not many like that. Those that respond to the appeal of the gospel are the nobodies. And it's okay to be a nobody if you can have God as your Father, because He's the most important somebody in the world. If you have a need to respond to God's invitation, perhaps you haven't been treating others as you should. Perhaps you yourself are a nobody, but you need to be somebody. You need to be somebody for the Lord. If you're here and you have a need to respond to God's invitation for any reason, please come as we stand and as we sing.